years ago, in small-town bars across the UK, you could find partygoers spinning, twirling, and pumping their legs to the fast sounds of American soul music. But it wasn't the top 40 Motown sound you'd usually hear. In fact, by that time in the 1970s, funk and disco had already taken over the charts. These kids craved soul they hadn't heard yet, rare B-sides and small label releases that were overlooked in the surplus of American-produced soul music. DJs in the UK began collecting soul records that were off the beaten track and often impossible to find again. That specific sound of soul and the nightlife culture that erupted around it was branded as Northern Soul. Unlike other genres, Northern Soul was defined by one specific foreign culture's appreciation of American music. The Northern referring to the parts of England that first began to embrace the all-night soul party culture. Today in San Francisco, we have our own vibrant party culture, fueled by the same desire to dance to rare 60s soul songs that you can't hear every day and are almost impossible to find anywhere else. Here in the Bay Area, we have well over a dozen reoccurring dance nights where crate-digging DJs spin their favorite singles from the late 50s, 60s, and early 70s on their original format, 7-inch records at 45 revolutions per minute. For the past few months, I've been working with NPR Music to launch the first ever 24-hour stream of Northern Soul music, but from my viewpoint, as a soul DJ based here in the Bay Area. And in that process, I've been trying to figure out just how to define the foreign concept of Northern Soul in relation to the contemporary soul party culture here in San Francisco. And I figure the best way to do that would be to bring more local DJs into the conversation. So in this hour-long special, I've invited popular DJs from around the Bay Area's soul party scene to talk about where they find records, what makes the party culture in San Francisco special, and how it is and isn't informed by its Northern Soul predecessor. I'll also be mixing in some of the most distinctive and hard-to-find soul records that epitomize the soul sound you can find on San Francisco dance floors now, as well as the Northern Soul all-nighters that happened decades before, thousands of miles away. It's gonna be a fun hour. Hi, everybody. We have Tom Temprano, aka DJ Carnita, and Amy Martinez, otherwise known as DJ Brown Amy, with us, both resident DJs of the monthly afternoon dance party Hard French. And DJ Primo Patino, longtime San Francisco DJ at nights like Nightbeat, Oldies Night, Two Men Will Move You, just to name a few. So what is it about soul music that attracts you to it? And also, what makes you want to share it with a crowd? Tom?
Well, I grew up listening to, I guess, what you would call more top 40 soul as a kid. My parents were both born in 1950, so they were teenagers in the early 60s. So that was the musical education that I came up in. And I came back to soul when I moved to San Francisco for the first time and just found such a resonance in those classics I grew up on, but also started to really explore and educate myself on soul that may not have been at the top of the charts when my parents were in high school. Soul music has a quality and I guess almost a roughness even in its most polished form, but it's really this moment in pop music that had such genuine emotion, and even the instruments that were backing it were played from this place that really I think is unvarnished and resonates and is gritty and you can really dig into, and I've always felt that in my experience of it.
Primo?
Well, soul records are for me are sort of part of the pantheon of great old music, you know, especially in you know, like I think what we commonly refer to as soul music during, say, like the mid to late 60s, there is a certain like hopefulness that's often coming out. And I think for me, like I always gravitated towards that, you know, I mean, I gravitate towards all the, you know, all the different kinds of different feelings that songs have, but there's that hopefulness in soul music that's coming out of darkness. I worked in this record store in New York. One day the boss is this guy from Spain named Alberto. He's like, Primo, today I have the greatest record I've been looking for so long. And it was My Baby Likes to Boogaloo by Don Gardner, which I think Tom, Amy, and I can all agree, and you, by you as well, it's a absolute just runaway train of a heavy record with a guy, with Don Gardner, who was, you know, grew up singing gospel, who had a real powerful voice. And I was like, that's the music that I want to play. And I want everyone else to get loose to it, because I don't want to be alone feeling all crazy like this.
I think that's a perfect segue to play a few records. Let's start it off with that Don Gardner track Primo mentioned from 1967. Here's My Baby Likes to Boogaloo. My baby likes a boogaloo.
Together! time. Look out now.
Just heard the Jets with the song Everything I Do It For My Baby from Port Records, 1966. Before that, the Northern Soul dancer Let's Cop a Groove by Bobby Wells, released on Beacon Records in 1968. And starting that block off was Don Gardner's 1967 stomper My Baby Likes to Boogaloo, which was a true Glowtown production. You're listening to KALW. I'm Ashley Ann Krigbaum. I'm here in the studio talking with DJs Primo, Brown Amy, and DJ Carnita, soul DJs here in San Francisco. We're talking about records and soul music and playing them specifically here in the Bay Area. So when I took on the project of compiling a list of songs considered to be Northern Soul, it became challenging in a way I wasn't quite expecting, because Northern Soul, as a genre, I mean, the word Northern in that title is talking about the northern area of England where these records weren't produced. It's just where they became notably popular for the first time. So for you guys, Primo, Amy, Tom, when you think about the term Northern Soul, what comes to mind? Primo?
You know, it's a European appreciation of American music. And it was a working class, originally working class English, and they were miserable. And they were looking for escape, you know, and they were like, Northern Soul was the first rave music in a lot of ways. The things that seem to succeed, especially in Northern Soul, you'll notice that a lot of the times the song will be like, you know, like My Love Is Gone With the Wind or something really dark and sad, because, you know, there's like a dark and sad experience that it's like a massage or something, you know, it's pushes into your heart and finds these painful feelings that you have and gives voice to them. It's emotional. It's alternatingly very beautiful and soaring and very dark and sad. And I really, Northern Soul was what I wanted to play in the beginning. Like when I first started buying records, I want to play those fast soul records. And as I got more into it, I realized that for me, a lot of times, and especially in the spaces that we're in, and I think just culturally where we're at, you know, a lot of times you're playing in like a dive bar or like you're playing for less than like 500 people, you know, and this R&B music to me is makes more sense as dance music sometimes, at least as far as like in comparison to the like Northern Soul stuff that I was looking for.
If you're looking for Northern Soul records, how do you know you found one?
It's really record by record. And that's one of the, I mean, even just finding, because I really personally, I have to say, I would like to break away from even talking about Northern Soul, because I think that even in Europe, a lot of people are too, because at least it's my personal opinion that it's almost a disservice to the artists, because they made soul music, and to have their music defined by what a group of people in Europe decided to dance to is a little strange.
It's also not giving credit to the artist.
No, exactly. They weren't trying to make a Northern Soul song at all, you know.
I mean, also, like, some of these Northern Soul songs are, you know, like, if you go on eBay, they're selling for, like, $500 a song, where, you know, a lot of times the people that actually made the music aren't obviously seeing any of that.
Yeah, it's worth pointing out, though, that a lot of those people in the UK would actually pay someone like Daryl Banks, who couldn't get a show in America, would pay them to come over and play. And it was, for a lot of American soul artists, was this beautiful, like, a sudden understanding of there are thousands of people in Europe that want to dance to my song. But I think that, I don't necessarily take issue with that scene so much as I take issue with us, like, redefining American music and, by and large, African American music by another fan base. I think it's excellent that they've uncovered so many things, and I think that, you know, there's definitely some total criminals in the Northern Soul scene that have done terrible things to the artists, but and by and large they love the music, and, you know, yeah, like, you know, a lot of the artists would tell you that the Northern Soul scene has been a, you know, an incredible experience for them.
Yeah, I mean, it also seemed like it was about kind of just like, you know, the DJ having that record, actually being able to play it for other DJs so that they can see, not even necessarily about the song, just about like, well, look at the record that I got, and it's
that's where it
gets $500 record.
Yeah,
and,
for sure.
You know, people are still doing that. You know, like I would rather play an amazing $5 record. You know, like that's where it's at. You know, really. I mean, who has the money to spend $500 on a record anyway? You know, I feel like that whole like Northern Soul scene was really big on that. It was really big on just what you actually have and like who has the rarest record to play, you know, just to like show off in front of all of their friends when actually people that are dancing have no idea what you're playing.
I feel that that's something that really differentiates San Francisco, that it's more about just the songs you're playing, not about the contest of who has the most expensive or rarest record. I think it's something that really identify San Francisco from so many other soul scenes.
You know, I think that people are more willing to kind of seek out stuff that isn't like your average like club music here in San Francisco. And I don't know, maybe that's one of the reasons why soul here is so awesome. And, you know, the variety is a really big thing. There's just incredible soul nights and soul DJs in San Francisco.
Thank you, Amy and Tom and Primo, for coming in and sharing your thoughts. Now, I'd like to play a few songs that demonstrate the soul sound that we've been trying to describe. So first up, Kim Weston's Helpless. This is a ballad of emotional agony set to the soundtrack of a kickin' beat. Track was I Stand Accused of Loving You by The Glories, released on Date Records in 1967. Before that, In the Twilight Zone by The Astors, who formed in Memphis while the band members were still in high school. That was recorded at Stax in 1965 and most likely with Booker T and the MGs backing the group. Prior to The Astors, you heard Gone with the Wind Is My Love by Rita and the Tiaras. And before recording this solo ballad, Rita Graham was actually one of Ray Charles's Raylettes. This 45 RPM single was released on Door Records in 1967. And at the beginning of that stretch, you heard a favorite played here in San Francisco, Helpless by Kim Weston, released on both Tamla and Gordy Records in 1965. If you're just tuning in, I'm Ashley Ann Krigbaum, and you're listening to KALW. I've been sitting in the studio talking about records with a few of San Francisco's busiest soul DJs. I'm now joined by DJs Lucky and Paul Paul, resident DJs of the popular Saturday night soul party that happens at the Elbow Room on Valencia, as well as other nights around town. Hi, fellas. So I'd like to start by pointing out what I find unique about San Francisco is the amount of regular dance nights that we have in the city that revolve specifically around 60s soul records. Yet there aren't, you know, turf grievances or rivalries that have historically gone hand in hand with DJ culture. Why is that? Paul?
The fact that we all guest at each other's nights and we go to each other's clubs, and I think that kind of helps build a scene that is fun, and there's a lot of cross-pollination, and that just kind of helps everyone thrive at the same time. And then, you know, every night has a different little niche to it and a slightly different focus maybe, and every DJ's got their own style. And everyone that I know that DJs is also very nurturing of people that are coming up and just getting into it and just started collecting records, and it's very open. It's like a very open door scene. And it's not like it's got to be one way. This style of soul has to it has to be played or it's not good. It's everyone plays everything 60s, like from girl groups to oldies to soul to northern soul to even some funk and early disco stuff. It's all very supportive and cross-pollinating, and the different type of people that go to these events, it's not a purist type thing. You got all sorts of people, all walks of life coming in and dancing together, and it has nothing to do with like cliques or scenes or anything like that. So whenever I'm in a crowd dancing and I look around and I just see like mods, and then I look over here and I see some punkers, and then I look over here and I see some yuppies, and they're all dancing together to soul, it's great. And it's a fun thing to witness and see. And that's pretty regular at many nights. I mean, you also got a lot of like, you know, students and pretty much all across the board, every type of person that can get into a bar will be there.
What are some of the conversations you have with yourselves, like inner dialogues when you're choosing records, maybe specifically in those times where the time is literally tight and you know you only have maybe 30 seconds and you just can't find the right next song? It'd be interesting to what happens in your brain during those times.
Well, I definitely spend some time, as I'm sure most do, before you go out. You know, there's a saying that says preparation is everything and execution is play. If you have spent all this time amassing these records, you should probably at least organize them into some way that you can find them manageable in a dark nightclub when there's all kinds of variables being thrown at you.
What are some of those variables?
Crazy people.
Yeah, a lot of alcohol-influenced requests from audience members asking for things like Whitesnake to Aretha Franklin. You know, you never really know.
People who don't know where they are?
Yeah. Drinks being spilled, sound feeding back, needles breaking, records skipping, some friend calling you on the phone asking to get on the guest list, or
wires getting unplugged, yeah. Somebody tapping you on the shoulder, somebody waving a napkin in your face with something written on it. But to go back to the preparation, I think that that's pretty key. And it's like, for me, when I go to these events, I would be pretty much lost if I had done all this planning and I hadn't somewhat assembled things into an order that I could work with later, given the variables.
Can you talk about some of the places you go to find records?
We can't divulge that information.
I'd love to, but I'm not available at this time.
No, you know, honestly, there's times where I'll find stuff just randomly, and if you're a record collector, you're always looking. I'll walk down the street and just look in people's garages, and if it's garage doors open, someone's working on their car, and they seem presentable, and I see a big stack of 45s, I'll be like, hey, are those your 45s? You know, just get the conversation going, and oftentimes they'll let you look through them. They'll let you buy them, and sometimes they'll have nothing but garbage. But there's times where that's where I find great stuff. And even thrift stores, they'll have like four records, and three of them are great. Sometimes they have no records, but you got to always look.
So, in all that hunting, Paul, is there a record that's just really stuck with you?
I would say one of the songs that has been in my record box pretty constantly since I got it was Ain't No More Room by The Kittens. And there's something about it that's just, it's kind of a pile driving song as far as like emotion and the build up and the tempo and all that. Every time I hear it, it just, I kind of melt and want to dance. And the lyrics are very like about heartbreak, but somehow really optimistic about just like taking the power back, and it just gets me every time I play it. Yeah, I don't know. That's my perfect song.
Let's take a break and listen to it.
How could you do it? love's dead. Now I wonder where's my pride. Oh, I find myself still in need of your baby on my side. Ooh, baby, I can't sleep at night. Your love, I can't go on. It's another day, but the same old song. Ooh, baby,
baby, what has happened? Ooh, baby, what has happened? Baby, what has happened? Baby, what has happened?
Why can't you see? Without love, nothing can be. Without your love, I can't go on. It's another day, but the same old song.
That thumping track was Last Minute Miracle by Linda Jones, originally released in 1967. Before that, Honey Please Stay by the Philadelphia group, The United Four. Then the smooth and heart-wrenching Baby What Has Happened to Our Love by The Ringleaders, currently their only known record released under that moniker. And at the start, The Kittens with Ain't No More Room. You're listening to KALW. I'm Ashley Ann Krigbaum. I'm joined by local DJs Lucky and Paul here in the studio tonight. We're taking a look at the music behind San Francisco's thriving 60s soul scene. So, how do you describe the variations in the soul records that you play?
I'd like to think that soul could be broken down in probably quarters of the type of soul music that you hear in San Francisco. I think you can hear the gritty Southern Stax sound. I think you can hear the polished big city Motown sound. I think you can hear the sweet soul and gritty soul of the South that encompasses what people like to refer to as slow jams. And I'd also like to think you could hear an underground sound, the big city soul known as Northern.
So, speaking of Northern soul as a definition of a genre, it's kind of complicated depending on who you talk to. For me, the way I stumbled upon the name Northern Soul, I was listening to a compilation when I was living in England like 8 years ago, and someone said, oh, this is a Northern Soul compilation. And I was like, oh, but they're all 60s records from America. What's the Northern part? So you guys, how do you define it?
There's a lot of songs that I'll play that someone will be like, oh, this is a great Northern Soul track. And I'll be like, I didn't know that it was a Northern Soul track, because I'm not really steeped in that history and don't have the depth of knowledge because I haven't investigated it that deeply enough to know like every single Northern Soul track that's out there or what's most popular or whatever.
Or even how do you define what a Northern Soul track is?
Yeah, and it's really vague, and you know, I grew up listening to soul music in America and what was played on the radio and then buying records and listening to the records just as they were. And some of the songs I like, sometimes there'd be a track or two that I didn't think was as good as the others, but in general, I just played what my heart found desirable and what I thought would be fun to dance to for myself. And if other people like to dance to it, great.
I think even Northern Soul's notion of what it is has changed over time. I think that at some stage of the game, whether you look at, you know, Wigan Casino or, you know, the Twisted Wheel or any of these places, if you look at the history and the way that the types of soul that they have chosen for their clubs have been played out, every club has its own sound. And historically, every one of these clubs basically has done their own thing. And I think that it's an important fact to mention, because that's exactly what we're doing in San Francisco. Nobody's telling you what to play. You're basically doing your thing and having as much fun as possible.
Yeah, to me, Northern Soul is, it's a genre that is popular for some people. I never really found myself informed by it because I didn't pay attention to it. I just kind of was like, in my mindset, soul music was soul music, and playing something that's like from 1962 to or 1971, or that was a girl group, was a little bit more R&B, a little bit more up-tempo, that has string section or no horns or whatever, pretty much all across the board. If I liked it, I liked it. And putting a label on something or limiting yourself sometimes, I think, can be shooting yourself in the foot sometimes. But I don't know.
I think there's a lot of misunderstanding upon what it actually is.
Definitely.
And it's all good, apparently. Like, you know, we like soul music. So maybe just the thing about the whole thing is we all want to do our own thing and capture our little piece of that that expresses what we love, who we are.
Totally. Your taste. I mean, that's, for me, a big essence of DJing. Like, it's you sharing your taste and what you care about, and partially not being afraid of what people will think about it, and also partially hoping that they're going to love it too.
That's what's great about San Francisco too, is that most every night I'll go to, I'll learn something new about some other song I've never heard of, or label I've never heard of, or an artist I've never heard of. And pretty much everyone in that I've experienced in the city as far as a DJ is so open about discussing and sharing and giving and teaching without any kind of, like, there's never a, like, you don't know this or you don't know that. So we've definitely seen waves of people come and go, and nights come and go, and but I think honestly the same people who were there in the beginning are still there now, and are there. I don't see any signs of it slowing down or going away at all. It only seems to get stronger and stronger, and there's always records out there that none of us has heard yet that we'll be finding and playing. So it's always something new.
And on that note, I'd like to thank you both, Paul and Lucky, for sharing your thoughts. If you like the music you've heard on the show, you can find over 13 more hours of rare Northern Soul tracks streaming right now at npr.org/music, or you can find a link on the main page of kalw.org. A warm thank you to the DJs who sat down with me here at KALW, to Tom Temprano, a.k.a. DJ Carnita, and DJ Brown Amy, as well as DJ Primo, DJ Lucky, and DJ Paul Paul. To find out where they're playing records next, as well as where to find other soul parties in the Bay Area, visit kalw.org. Thank you to Max Jacobs and Eric Jansen for their engineering expertise, Devin Strolovich for trusting me with an hour of what is usually his great show, Fog City Blues, as well as Matt Martin at KALW, and Otis Hart and Soraya Muhammad at NPR Music for pushing this Northern Soul project through. And thank you for listening. For KALW, I'm Ashley Ann Krigbaum. Ah, heck, let's throw one more song in. Here's Chris Clark's 1966 recording of Frank Wilson's Do I Love You? Indeed I Do.